All right, so we'll say good morning. Today's daf is Mem Tes, but we'll begin Mem Ches Amud Beis. So if you remember, again, the Gemara pointed out the case in the Tanur Rabbanon about seven lines up in the bottom. Let's just read it quickly. Tanur Rabbanon is Por Shal Prakim Vizama Shari Tani. If you have a scissor made of pieces, Vizama Shari Tani is a carpenter's plane. Chibur L'tum Avein Chubur L'Azol. They are considered to be connected for Tamei purposes. Right? The common denominator of both of these items is they're both made up of multiple pieces. So they are considered to be connected for tumah purposes, which means that, let's say, if the wood part of the carpenter's plane becomes tameh, so the metal part, the blade, does as well. Or if one part of the scissors become tameh, the other part does as well. Vein chibur la'azol. But they are not considered to be connected for sprinkling purposes, which means that, let's say, if it were to become, if it were to contract tumah from a mace, and you have to purify it by sprinkling on it the ashes of the para aduma, you would have to dafka sprinkle on both parts of the kli. Now remember, the water doesn't have to touch every single part of the kli, but the idea is you'd have to independently sprinkle on the blade and on the wooden frame and on each part of the scissors. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Manoshach, ichibur hu afil lazon nami. Ilav chibur hu afil lutum nami lo. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Meaning one way, choose a side. If the item is considered to be attached, then just like it's attached for tumah, it should be considered to be connected, attached for hazah, and all you need to do is sprinkle on the kli as a whole. However, if it's not considered attached for hazah, then it should have been considered attached for tumah, meaning that if one part of it becomes tameh, the rest should not. So the Gemara says, you're right. Amar Rava, Dvar Torah, Bishas Melacha Chibur, Bein Latuma Bein Lahazah. So the Gemara says like this, Midda Oraisa, Bishas Melacha, is considered to be connected for Tuma and for Hazah. For Tuma and for Hazah. So meaning Midda Oraisa, if the independent pieces are considered to be one cohesive unit, for Tuma and for sprinkling. Bishalom Bishas Melacha, and when the item is not actively being used in its primary Melacha, Eino Chibur, Lolo Tuma Velo Lahazah. And actually not considered to be connected, not for Tuma purposes and not for sprinkling purposes. Top of Mentes, the Gazu Rabbanon. And the rabbis came along and legislated the following, Al Tuma Shelo Bishas Melacha, Mishum Tuma Shebishas Melacha, Va'al Hazah Shebishas Melacha, Mishum Hazah Shelo Bishas Melacha. So both say, essentially what happened is that the Chazal came along and created a chumrah in this particular situation. And they were gozer, literally, they were gozer on tuma shelo b'shas malacha because of tuma b'shas malacha. Now remember, midda oraisa, the only time that the item is considered to be attached is b'shas malacha. Comes along the Rabbanon, and they were gozer on this type, on a kli made up of multiple pieces, that even shelo b'shas malacha, if part of it becomes tameh, the whole thing becomes tameh. That was the rabbinic gezeira. And they were gozer on hazah shebishas malacha mishum hazah shelo bishas malacha. What does that mean? That just like again bishas malacha, you have to go ahead and sprinkle the whole kli, right? The whole kli in order to become so too they were gozer that even shelo bishas malacha, when it's not considered attached, you also have to go ahead and sprinkle on each part of the kli. Or in other words, Rabbi will say all the Rabbanon did is extended both cases l'chumra. So therefore, halacha l'maisa, we go l'chumra with tuma, and therefore we always assume both b'shas malacha and shelo b'shas malacha, if part of the kli becomes tame, the whole kli becomes tame, and we go l'chumra with hazah, that just like, again, b'shas malacha, when the kli is considered attached, you have to sprinkle on the entire kli, so to shelo b'shas malacha, when the kli is considered to be in multiple pieces, you also have to sprinkle on each of the pieces. Bizman shein lochim. So remember, Rabbi said, the Mishnah said, when talking about the various items with which you can insulate. So the Mishnah said, after talking about all of the items with which you cannot insulate, the Mishnah said, Bizman Shein Lochin. These are all considered when these items are moist. Ava or wet. Ava tomin bahem b'kishehen yevashin. But you can go ahead and insulate with them when they are dry. So the Gemara asks the question, Iboilahu, Lochin me'atzman, Lochin machmas atzman, Odzilma lochin machmas dover acher. So the Gemara says, when we say that the items that the Mishnah talks about are wet, what do you mean it's wet? Is it wet from some type of external moisture? Or is it talking about the moisture of the actual item itself? So the Gemara says, Tashma, the lo b'teven, the lo b'zogin, you can't use straw, You can't use zogim. Zogim, remember, is the leftover grape skins. Below b'muchin, you can't use this muchin. I don't know if we came up with a good English word yesterday. Soft material. Below b'asavim, and after various types of grass, bizman shein lochin, when they are moist. So the Gemara says, "I amrit bishlama lochin machmas davar acher." So item makes sense if you're talking about that it's wet, that it's wet from some type of external moisture. Shapir, then that makes sense. Ela I amrit lochin machmas atzmon. But if you're telling me that it's moist, meaning it's its own moisture, muchin lachin machmas atzmon hechi mishkachaslo. Where are you ever going to have a situation of muchin that is wet on its own? Right, that's moist on its own. Remember, muchin, Rashi pointed out, muchin could be wool, muchin could be cotton, muchin could be flax, muchin could be any soft material. So how would you have any of this soft material that generates its own moisture, to which the Gemara says, mimamrata debeni atomi. You can have it, look at Rashi, mimamrata debeni atomi, mitzemer hanimrat mibein yirako seh shel behema. So apparently, if you were to go ahead and, let's say, take the wool from the inside of the thighs of sheep, shehu mole zeya, it's filled with the animal's perspiration. So apparently, again, because that's a part of the body where the animal sweats a lot, so apparently that wool always has a moisture to it. So that's a case ultimately of muchin that would generate its own moisture. V'hal d'tani Rav Oshia, tomnin b'ksus yevesha u'b'peros yeveshin, aval lo b'ksus locha v'lo b'peros lochin. So the Gemara says, and that which Rav Oshia said later on, which is actually going to read it shortly, that you're permitted to go ahead and insulate with a dry garment or with dried fruits, but not with wet garments and not with wet fruits. So the Gemara says, "Ksus lecha machmas atzma hechi mishkachasla." How can you ever have an article of clothing that generates its own moisture? Mimamrata debeni atomi. The Gemara gives the same answer. If you have a garment that is made from this wool, from the thighs of the animal, apparently, again, that wool always retains its moisture. Okay. So the Gemara goes weiter. Mishnah goes weiter. Tomnin biksus ubeperos ubekanfeyona. So the halacha is, you're permitted to go ahead and insulate a pot. Again, all hatmana. Remember, whenever we're talking about hatmana, we're talking about also on Erev Shabbos. So you're permitted to go ahead and insulate biksus with an article of clothing, biperos with fruit, bikanfeyona. Now, kanfeyona is actually interesting. Kanfeyona literally means, well, for now, it'll mean the feathers of a dove. Bird feathers. You can't say bird feathers. Ubinisores shel charoshim. Look at Rashi. Nisoras Rashi says, Sheminasrim hanagrim in aitim, sawdust of carpenters, ubina ures shel pishton daka, and with finely combed pieces of flax. Rabbi Huda oser bedaka, umatir begasa. Rabbi Huda says, no, you can't use the fine flax, but you could use the thicker or coarser flax. Says the Gemara. Amr Rav Yanai. So we'll say the Gemara is going to go on a total tangent over here. You're going to see why it does this in just a moment. Amr Rav Yanai, tefillin tzrichin guf noki. Tefillin requires a clean body. Ke Elisha bal knafayim. Just like in Elisha bal knafayim, literally, Elisha bal knafayim literally means Elisha, the master of the wings. So you have to have a clean body for tefillin, just as Elisha bal knafayim used to have. All right. Mahi. So what does this mean, a clean body? Abayi says that a person is not permitted to flatulate when wearing tefillin. Rava Amar, Shloyishon Bahem. Rava says you have to be careful not to fall asleep with tefillin. Now both say they're both kind of one and the same. Meaning the fear is that if you fall asleep with wearing tefillin, you may not be vigilant about your bodily processes, and therefore that may ultimately lead to a lack of covered with the tefillin. So fine. So the Gemara says the fine. So now the Gemara quoted that. The Gemara says, "Va'amai karli bal knafayim." So remember, when the Gemara wanted to give an example of someone who was exceptionally vigilant with his respect and honor of tefillin, so the Gemara quotes Elisha bal knafayim. Why is he called Elisha, the master of the wings? So the Gemara tells an amazing story. Shepam achos gozra malchus romi harasha gzera al Yisrael. Because one time, the evil Roman government decreed a gzera on the Jewish people. What was the gzera? Shekol hamaniach tefillin yenakru esmocho. Whoever puts on tefillin, literally yenakru esmocho, literally means his skull will be pierced, or his brains will be pierced. They would crack his head open. Vahaya Elisha Manicham. But amazingly enough, so Rashi just points out over here, Yinakru es Mocho, Rashi says, just go back one more Rashi, by the way. Rashi just says, Shelo Yishan Bohem. Rashi says, Shema Yafiach O Yira Keri. Avalim Yochol Yizar Shelo Yishan Bohem, Kol Agufim Nikim, Ba'afacha Shi Cholon Lahamid Atzman. So, just Rashi points out over here that the falling asleep is an issue because of both Yafiach, and also because of Balkari, a fear of seminal emission. But Aloch HaMais, as long as a person could go ahead and remain awake, the assumption is that a person is able to go ahead and control any other bodily processes. I'm sorry, now back to the story. So the Roman government decreed that you can't put on tefillin. And if you were to put on tefillin, they would cast a shon, they would split open a person's head. So, V'hayu Elisha Manicham. And Elisha still put on tefillin. Still put on tefillin. V'yotzei l'shuk. Not only would he go ahead and put on tefillin, but what? He would go out into the marketplace. I will say, interestingly enough, we know that there are only three things that you're generally obligated to give your life for. There are exceptions. The exceptions is when there's a clear desire on the part of, let's say, Goyim, to go ahead and stamp out Judaism, then a person is permitted to be Moser Nefesh for any mitzvah. So meaning, if you see that there's a clear desire, like in this case, there was a clear desire to uproot a particular mitzvah, a person is permitted to go and be Moser Nefesh for that particular mitzvah. So Elisha Baal Knafayim puts on tefillin, Yotzi L'shuk, goes out to the marketplace. Ra'u Kasdor Echad. So what happened? He was spotted by a Roman officer. Rots Miponov, and he ran. So Elisha Baal Knafayim ran. Virat Zacharov, and the Roman officer began to pursue him. V'chevan she'egia etzlo. So now when Elisha apparently had nowhere else to run, he realized that the Roman officer was going to catch up with him. So what did he do? Natlan meirosho va'achzan biyado. He took off his shelrosh. And he held it in his hand. He cupped it in his hand. Amarlo, maze biyadecha. So now when the Roman officer caught up with him, the Roman officer said, "Nu, what do you have in your hand?" Amarlo, kanfe yona. So he said, "I have wings doves. Sorry, long week. I have doves wings in my hand." So apparently there used to be some kind of like ornament like this called that people had doves wings. Okay, pashat es yado. So obviously the Roman officer said, "Open up." Pashat es yado. He opened his hands. V'nimtza kanfe yona. And amazingly enough, a miracle occurred, and the tefillin had turned into a pair of dove's wings. V'fichach korin also Elisha bal Knafayim. Therefore, you can imagine, after an episode like that, he got the name Elisha bal Knafayim. So the Gemara says, Umayshna kanfe yona. Why kanfe yona? Why wings doves? Mishar ofos. Meaning, why the wings of a dove? Why not the wings of an eagle or the wings of anything else? So the Gemara says, Mishum. The Amsil Knesset Yisrael Yona, because the Jewish people are often compared to a Yona. Shene Emar, Kanfe Yona Nechpa Bekesef. The wings of the dove are coated with silver. So why is Klal Yisrael compared to a dove? Ma Yona Kinafeha Maginos Aleha, such a beautiful Gemara. Because just like doves, Kinafeha Maginos Aleha, its wings protect it. Af Yisrael Mitzvos Maginos Alehem. So to the Jewish people, the mitzvos are able to shield them as well. B'nesorah shel charosh, if we have time at the end, I want to come back and say something very interesting related to that Gemara. B'nesorah shel charoshim, so you're not permitted to go ahead and use sawdust in order to go ahead and insulate the pot. Iboilehu Rabbi Yehuda, anesorah shel charoshim koi, Iboilehu Rabbi Yehuda, anesorah shel charoshim koi, o anorah shel pishtan koi. So also, if you remember again, Rabbi Yehuda said, Bedaka oser bedaka umatir begasa. So Rabbi Huda comes along and says, you cannot use the fine item, but you can use the thicker, coarser item. So the Gemara asks, what is Rabbi Huda commenting on? Is he commenting on the case of the sawdust, or is he commenting on the case of the flax, or is he commenting on both? So the Gemara says the following: Tashma desanyo. So the Gemara quotes a brayso. Rabbi Huda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda holds that finely combed pieces of flax are just like manure. Now we'll say, what does that mean? Remember, we saw in yesterday's Mishnah that zevel manure is a davar shemosif hevel, that it's an item that actually has the ability to generate heat, which means you can't use it for hatmana at all. Shmamina, so we see from this price, an urish al pishtan koi shmamina. So clearly when Rabbi Huda goes in and says that you can only use the thin, fine item, but you may not use the thicker, coarser item, that what is he referring to? He's dafka referring to pishtan and not to the case of the neoresh, in that case of the Nisora Shacharashim, and not the case of the sawdust. Fine. Weiter. Tomnin Bishalchin Umetaltlin Osam. So the Gemara says like this: you're permitted to go ahead and insulate a pot with shalchin, and you could also carry it. What shalchin? Take a look at the Mishnah Rashi. Shalchin oros kimo vehefshe targum ayishlach. So shalchin refers to animal skins. So you can go ahead and insulate the pot with animal skins, and you could also carry the skins. You can move the skins on Shabbos. Begize tzemer, you're permitted to go ahead and insulate the pot with wool shearings. However, but you may not go ahead and carry them. So also what the Gemara seems, what the Mishnah is already telling us over here is that the shalchan, these animal skins, clearly have another permitted usage, purpose on Shabbos. Therefore, they're not muktzah, as opposed to the wool shearings, which have no other permitted purpose on Shabbos, and therefore, again, they're muktzah. Keitza to osa. So we'll say it's actually very important. We made reference to this yesterday. So what's interesting to now see is how exactly was hatmana done in the Mishnah, right? How do they do it? Because what's interesting to note, and I guess I'm sure the question that's on many of us when we read this Mishnah is, when you talk about all of these items with which you are insulating, so how exactly are you insulating the pot with these items, right? If you take your whatever you choose, whatever case you want, with your sawdust, how exactly is this set up on the stove on Erev Shabbos? So the Mishnah now says it. The Mishnah says, Ketzad u'osa, what do you do? So what they used to have is, let me just film to give one line of introduction to this. They would put the pot essentially into like a box, into a receptacle, into a kli, and they would line that kli with the hatmana material. That's what would happen. Because otherwise, a lot of this hatmana material, technically speaking, is loose. So if you're just going to have your pot on the stove, and you're just going to put the hatmana material around it, the hatmana material is not going to stay. So if you can imagine like a, obviously it wouldn't be a wooden box, but some kind of cleat, some kind of receptacle, line it with the hatmana stuff, put the pot inside the box.
Under the receptacle, there's fire.
Correct. Correct.
It's like a crock pot
situation. Yeah, I guess it's kind of like a crock, right. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Ancient crock.
Except, remember, there's no heating coils in the actual, right, as opposed to the crock pot, which has the heating coils on the outside. It's a good visual. So the Mishnah says this. Kesed o'osa. So what would you do? So look at Rashi. Kesed o'osa. Zesh taman bahen. Kesed yitol kedei raso. Hoyo va'asul atatlan sharehi tmuna kula bahen. So here's the interesting point. If you're going ahead and you're insulating your pot with the animal skins, so then there's not a problem with getting my food because I can move the skin, because the skin is not muktzah. But let's say I insulated my pot with wool shearings. Wool shearings, the Mishnah just told me, are muktzah. Okay, very nice. Now I have to get my pot of food. So how do I do it? We actually mentioned this yesterday. Kesed also says, how do you get your pot if you're using muktzah hatmana material? No tel es hakisui vehein no flos. What you do is you lift up the pot cover, and what happens when you lift up the pot cover? That mana material just slides off to the side. Look at Rashi. Notel kisui shel kedera sheyesh toras kli aleha ve'afagav shehein aleha lo ichbaslon delo naasis basis lohen shein asui ela lechasos kedera. So this is very important. Sa'ai, why don't you say, but one second, if the shearings are muktzah, then based on what we learned yesterday and the day before, it's a basis. It's a base for muktzah. And everyone agrees, even Rabbi Shimon holds that, remember, you can't move a basis, l'davar ha'asar on Shabbos. So which Rashi says, no, it's not a basis. Why? Because that pot cover has a very clearly defined role, which is a pot cover, to cover the pot, right? And therefore, again, it never becomes a basis to these muktzah items. Therefore, you just pick it up, the muktzah hatmana items slide off, and you're fine. V'hei noflos. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer, I'm back in the Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, what should you do? Kupa mata al tzida v'notel. What should you do? Now, Rabbi Elazar suggests something very interesting. Rabbi Elazar says that don't take the pot out of the receptacle. Don't take the pot out of the receptacle. I say, how do you get the contents of the pot? Just tilt the whole receptacle. tilt the receptacle, get the contents of the pot, and then turn it back upright. Why? He says, Shema Yitol Ve'in Yachal Ahachsir. Because if you remove the pot, then what can end up happening? All of the Hatmana material essentially what? Comes in. If all the Hatmana material comes in, you're pretty much not going to be able to use that receptacle again over the duration of Shabbos. Look at Rashi. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, Rav Elazar ben Azariah Omer Kupa Kupa Mata Altsi Davinotel. So says Rashi, Kishiba Lito Hakdera Mata Kupa Altsi Davinotel. Shema Yitol Hakdera V'yiplu Hagizin Shemikanu Mikanu So Haguma Shiyoshavan. Because what's going to happen? Again, the wool shearings is the one they're illustrating it with, because the truth is this wouldn't apply with other cases, because if your Hatmana material is not Mukta, so who cares? Even if you take your pot out, you move the Hatmana material, put the pot back in, and then cover it again. Or even if you don't cover it again, just leave it on the sides. The problem is with the Mukta Hatmana material. And if you're dealing with Mukta Hatmana material, you can't move aside the gizin, the shearings, in order to make room for the pot. Therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, don't remove the pots from the kupa, just tilt the kupa on the side, get the contents like that. However, the Chachamim say, no tel umachzir. The Chachamim say, no, you can go ahead and you can take the pot out and you can put it back. How that would work? Rashi says, b'gemara mafarish. We'll see the Gemara. Says the Gemara, Yosef Rabbi Yochanan ben Achinoi, Rabbi Yonasan ben Elazar, Yosef Rabbi Hanina bar Chama Gabayu, the Kami Boy Lehu. So Rabbi Yonasan ben Achinoi, Rabbi Yonasan ben Elazar, are sitting right to sin, Rabbi Chanina Barchama, all sitting together, becoming by. They ask the following question: Shalchin shal balabayis tnan, aval shal uman kevan de kapadalai lo metaltalinon, luhu, o dilma shal uman tnan, v'chol shikin shal balabayis. So they ask the following question: the Mishnah said that you could use skins to insulate, and that the skins are not mukza. So now the Gemara asks, whose animal skins are we talking about? Is it the animal skins of a balabayis, just a person's own animal skins? And those are the skins that you can go ahead and, those are not Moksan Shabbos, but let's say the skins of an Uman. An Uman means like a merchant. Or else, what does that mean? Someone is going to sell those skins. Those are Muktzah. Why? Sha'om Rashi says, Sha'om dos lemachran kapit alayhu. Hilchach lo lemizgi kaime ve'imat altlin osam. So they're asking, what is the case of skins that are not Muktzah? Maybe the Mishnah is talking about the skins of a balabais, or a person's own animal skins. So that's a person's not so makbid on them. So I don't really care if they get a little bit ruined, a little bit famished. It doesn't matter. Therefore, they're not mukta. But the skins of an uman, the skins of a person who sells them, of a merchant, those will be mukta. Or maybe the Mishnah is talking about the skins of an uman, and if the skins of an uman are not mukta, then what? Then all the more so the skins of a balabos. So the Gemara says the following. Amrul Rabbi Yonasan ben Elazar. So Rabbi Yonasan ben Elazar said, "Mistabra shal balabayis tnan." It would appear clear that we're talking about the skins of a balabayis. Aval shal uman kabed alayu. But when it comes to the skins of a merchant, uman literally means a craftsman. But what it means is someone who's ultimately going to go ahead and sell these skins, kabed alayu. He would be makbid not to use it for any purpose on Shabbos, and therefore they become mukta. Amrul Rabbi Hanina bar Chama, Kachama Rabbi Yishlav Rabbi Yosi. Abba Shilcha Abba. So Rabbi says, so they quote over here in the name of Rabbi Shmuel ben Yosi, and who said, "My father, Abba Shilcha Abba, my father was a tanner." Rashi says Shilcha Abba Uman la Abed Oros. He was a tanner. The Omer, and on Shabbos he would say, or even not on Shabbos, excuse me. Rashi says Bechol. The Omer Heviu Shalchan. And father used to say, "Bring out the skins and let's sit on them." What do you see from there? That even an uman, that even a craftsman who ultimately is going to do business with these skins, is not makbid on any kind of, not to use it for personal purposes, because even father would go out and say, "Let's sit on the skin." So therefore, that would seem to be a raya that what? That when the Mishnah says that the skins are not mukta, it even refers to the skins of an uman. I'm sorry? Maybe what? Yeah, I guess the fact that the Gemara doesn't make that distinction would seem not like that. They're talking about fully finished skins ready to be sold. Meisve, nusorin shal balabayis metaltlin osan. So the Brisa, the Gemara quotes Akasha. If you take nusorin of osan are boards, pieces of wood. Nusorin shal balabayis. So if a person has boards of wood, metaltlin osan, you are permitted to go ahead and move them on Shabbos. Vishal Uman ein metaltlin osan. But the boards of an Uman, the boards of a craftsman, you're not permitted to go out and move them on Shabbos. V'im chishav lases alein pas la'archin, benkachu benkach metaltlin. But if you had in mind to go ahead and what? Essentially use them as a table over the course of Shabbos, then you're permitted, then whether it's the boards of a balabos or the boards of an Uman, you're permitted to go ahead and use it. So we'll say, why does Igmar bring up this brisa? Because the price here is being mechalik between an object that belongs to a layman versus an object that belongs to a person who does business with this particular item. So again, you see that you can use the balabaises, you can move the balabaises' board of wood, but you can't move the umans, to which the Gemara says, no. Shiny nisarim dekaped alayu. A board of wood is a different kind of case. Why? Because the uman would be makbid not to use it for any other purpose. He would not use it for any other personal purpose. Rashi says, the kaped alayu, shema yiskalkulu. See, what the Gemara answers over here is that wood becomes warped. And apparently, I guess there's not so much damage you could really do to skins if people are just using it to go ahead and sit on it. So the Gemara is suggesting over here that it's only in the case of boards that an Uman would be makbid not to go ahead and use it for personal use in the home. That, therefore, unless he actively set it aside, let's say to be used as a table for company, it's going to be mukta on Shabbos. But skins still may not be mukta, because at the end of the day, skins will not really be ruined by personal use in the home. Therefore, maybe we could still hold what we said before, that even the skins of an Uman will not be mukta. Okay. Tashma. Oros. And Michael, now the Brice addresses your point. Oros, bein avudin ubein she'ein avudin. Whether the skins are tanned or whether they're not tanned, mutar letaltalon b'shabbos. You are permitted to go ahead and move them on Shabbos, i.e. they're not mukta. Lo amru avudin elo le'inyon tuma bilvad. So the Gemara says, but this whole avud, the only reason we're making a distinction between tanned hides and not tanned hides are only because of tuma. Rashi says, elo le'inyon tuma, it's the last wide line in Rashi on the top. Well, actually, taking the last one. The only time we make a distinction between a hide that is tanned and not tanned is elul inyan tuma. The avudin mekablin tuma velo she'inan avudin. So we'll say when it comes to Kabbalah's tuma, the only time an item can become tuma is become tame is if, or mekabel tuma is if it's a finished kli. When is a skin considered to be a finished kli? Only after it's been tanned. Right, only after it's mamish ready for usage. But for Shabbos purposes, we're not making a distinction between a hide that's been tanned or not. So the Gemara says, "My love, lo shnasha balabais for lo shnasha l'uman." Now, interestingly enough, the Braisa over here does not make a distinction with who owns the hides. Right, so the Braisa doesn't. So the Gemara assumes that this Braisa would cover both the hides of a balabas as well as of an uman. And we see from here that we don't distinguish in both cases, the hide is not considered to be mukta on Shabbos. They will say again, the reason the hide would not be considered to be mukta on Shabbos is because it has a permitted usage that people could sit on it. People often use it just as a mat to sit on. So the Gemara says, lo, shabala bayis. No. The price is only referring to the hide of a balabayis. Aval shal uman mai ein metaltlin. But no, when it comes to the hide of an uman who's going to use it for commerce purposes, it's mukta. So the Gemara says, 1 second. I hachi, had tani velo amru avudin elele inyon tuma bilvad, liflog velisne bididei. But if that's the case, says the Gemara, instead of the Brisa making a distinction between a tanned hide and not a tanned hide for tuma purposes, which has no Shabbos ramification, let the Brisa make a further distinction within Shabbos and let it say the following. When do we say that a hide is not mukta on Shabbos, b'shal balabayis, when it comes to balabayis, aval b'shal uman, but regarding the hide of an uman, lo, the Gemara, why would we not be permitted to go ahead and use it on Shabbos? To which the Gemara says, you're right, kula b'balabayis kamairi. The Gemara says, therefore you have to, right, therefore you have to say the whole Braisa must be talking about the balabais. I see what's going on over here. Ki tanoi. The Gemara says, in reality, it's a machlokis tanoim about how to deal with these hides. What's the machlokis tanoim? Oro shabalabais metaltlin osan, vishal uman ein metaltlin osan. So the first opinion says that it's only the hides of a balabayis that are permitted to go ahead and be moved on Shabbos, but shal uman, but the hides of an uman will be mukta. Rabbi Yossi says, echad zeh, the echad zeh metaltlin osan. Rabbi Yossi says, whether it's the hides of a balabayis or the hides of an uman, you are permitted to go ahead and move both. And Rabbi Yossi, halacha l'maaseh shulchan aruch paskins, that we hold that the hides of a balabais and a kutino, hides of a balabais and an umar are both not mukhzah on Shabbos. Since both are usable to go ahead and sit on, you could put a mat down and sit down on it on Shabbos. The balabais, we go with the approach of balabais generally, the umar, is not makpid so much just with simple usage of the hide, even though he's going to have to still resell it. Neither of them are mukhzah. Kind of like the testimony we saw in the name of Rabbi Shlomo Rabbi Yossi, who testified in the name of his father that even during the week, the father would allow the family to go ahead and sit on the hides. Fine. Hadur Yosef v'kami boilu. So we'll say the same group of rabbis were sitting together, and the following question was posed. Hadisnan avos melachos arboim chaser achos kineged mi. So we'll say, now the Gemara says something very interesting. Later on in Mirat Hashem, we will see a Mishnah that says that there are 40 melachos minus one. That now we'll discuss when we get to it, why the Mishnah uses that formulation. That 39 melachos. 39 melachos. So the Gemara says, so now the rabbis are sitting there talking, and they bring up the following discussion. When the Mishnah says that there are 40 minus 1, there are 39 melachos, kineged mi amar luhu. Where did they get the 39 melachos from? Where does that come from? So the Gemara says, amar luhu, Rabbi Chanina bar Chama. So Rabbi Chanina bar Chama said, kineged avodos hamishkan. So Rabbi Chanina bar Chama says, it corresponds to the various types of labor in the Mishkan. Look at Rashi. Keneged avodos hamishkan, osan hamenuyos sham beperek klagodol, hoyutzrichen lemishkan, uparsha shabbis nismuchol laparshas meleches hamishkan lemoltimenos. So Rabbi Chanina said, Rabbi Chanina bar Chama said, we know that the parsha of Shabbos is juxtaposed to the parsha of the Mishkan. So therefore we see from there that anything that was done in the Mishkan, or for the creation of the Mishkan, and by the way, it's not just the actual construction of the Mishkan, as we'll see, it can also refer to certain things that were done in order to allow for the ongoing service in the Mishkan. Due to the juxtaposition, anything that was done in the Mishkan, by definition, becomes Asur on Shabbos. Right? And therefore there were 39 different things that were done in the Mishkan, therefore again, those become Asur on Shabbos. Amaluhu Rabbi Yonas Rabbi Lazar, Kach Amar Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yossi Ben Lukunya, Kineged Melacha Melachto Umeleches Shebetora Arboim Chaser Achos. So interestingly enough, from both sides, so comes along Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yossi Ben Lukunya, and said, no, you know we have 39 Melachos, because the words Melacha Melachto and Meleches, which are all the same word of Melacha, appears 39 times in the Torah. Appears 39 times in the Torah. And from there we learn that there are 39 different melachos in on Shabbos. Okay. So the Gemara says the following. Look at Rashi. Sheva Torah. Sheksuv mechala Torah. V'hachi kam akra. Lo sase kam alacha. Kaminyan kam alacha Sheva Torah. So it's a very interesting drasha. So Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Lazar says that the Torah says you're not allowed to do malacha on Shabbos. What is malacha? So we know, he says, don't do malacha. Kaminyan kam alacha Sheva Torah. In accordance with the number of times that you'll find the word malacha in the Torah. The word malacha is said in the Torah 39 times. And therefore, Allah comes to the 39 malachos. Okay, now I will say, obviously, you'll still need the juxtaposition to teach you what exactly those malachos are, but it's interesting that before we even look at the Mishkan, what Rabbi Shimon ben Rabbi Yossi is suggesting is, we already know the number of malachos, even before we look at the Mishkan, based on the number of times that some variation of the word malacha appears in the Torah. So we'll say, now the Gemara gets into a very interesting question. So by Rabbi Yossi, if you go with that logic, that the 39 malachos is really based on the 39 times that the word malacha is used in the Torah. So the Gemara asks the following question. By Rav Yosef, Vayavo habaisa la'asos melachto, mimin yonahu, olo. So we'll say, we have a pasuk, by Yosef, right, that Yosef went to the house, this is talking about, again, when he's living in Potiphar's house. In Potiphar's house, the Torah talks about the fact that there was a day that no one was home except for Ashes Potiphar, and Yosef comes back to the house to do his work. So the question the Gemara asks is that melacha part of your count or not? Amar le'abai says, why do we have to guess here? V'leisei sefer Torah v'limni. take out the Torah. I don't know. Let's count it up, right? We don't have to have machlokes about this. It either is counted or it's not counted. Milo Amara Barachan Amrav Yochanan Lo Zozu Misham Atsheviu Sefer Torah Menom. So the end, Abaye says they did this once before after Rav Barachan said in Rav Yochanan that when this machlokes came up, when the discussion came up a little bit earlier, they actually took out a Sefer Torah and they did not leave the base medrash until what? Until they went through its beginning to end, counting up all of the malachos. So the Gemara says, no. What's the question? Amalei ki kamisafkali mishum dechsev v'hamalacha haysad dayam miminyanahu. So the Gemara says, because here's what's interesting is the question seems to be based on the following idea, that actually if you count it up, there are 40 malachas. There are 40 times that the word appears, which means that but we know for sure. Here's what you'll see: we know for sure that one doesn't really mean malacha. One doesn't really mean malacha. Now, why do you say one doesn't mean malacha? Because look at this pasuk. V'amlacha esadayam. So this is by the Mishkan. The Mishkan. So it says that the work was enough. So the Gemara asks, is this part of the count or not? V'ha kiman da'amar la'asos srachav nichnas o dilma v'yavo habayis la'asos malachtam minyonahu v'hai v'amlacha esadayam hachikam v'desham le'avidity. So what's I listening to this? So only one of these two malachas is going to be counted. So why? Because there's a fundamental machlokas. What's the machlokas? When it says that Yosef came back to the house, lasos malachto, there's a machlokas in the Gemara. That what does it mean? Lasos malachto can mean that he came, look, he was a servant in the house. So it could mean that he came back to the house to work. Or lasos malachto, some understand that what? That he came back with the intention to sin with the wife of Potiphar. Right, she was trying to seduce him all of these days. He had held out, but on that day he had decided to go ahead and give in to his temptation. So therefore, in that context, if you understand that it's talking about Yosef going back to give in to his desires, then malacha there doesn't really mean malacha. In which case, then the malacha by the Mishkan does mean malacha. On the other hand, if you hold that malachto by Yosef just means what? Malacha Yosef means his job, then what? Then the malacha by the Mishkan actually means what? V'haya ha-malacha ha-isadayam ha-chikamar de-shalim le-avidetu. So what the malacha ha-isadayam by the Mishkan means that what? The work was completed. In which case then, that malacha would naturally fit into the Shabbos, because remember, counting it for Shabbos, we're looking at cases of, or situations where the word malacha is used in the context of dynamic activity. In that case, the pasuk of v'hamalacha ha-isadayam is telling us what? The cessation of dynamic activity, which then would not be entered into the count of the 39 malachos of Shabbos. So the Gemara says, teiku. We don't know. Teiku. It's a good kasha. So what the Gemara comes down to is, at least according to who was it? Rabbi Yonis ben Elazar. Rabbi Yonis ben Elazar is that we have 39 malachos. We have 39 times the word malacha in some variation appears. There's a machlokas as to perhaps which words are counted and which words are excluded. But it seems to be the bottom line is everyone agrees on the particular count. Okay, so says the Gemara weiter. Teiku. So the Gemara goes on. Okay, Tanya. Tanya kimando amr kineged avodos hamishkan. So the Gemara now quotes a brisa that seems to support the mando amr, who holds that the 39 malachos correspond to the 39 forms of labor in the Mishkan. This Tanya, because the brisa says ein chayaven ela amalacha shekiyotzei ba'ayis of a Mishkan. The brisa says that on Shabbos you only chayiv for a type of malacha that was done on the Mishkan. For example, heim zaru in the Mishkan they sowed. Right, they planted and they sowed. Va'atem lo tizru. Therefore, you may not do. So, I'm going to say, where did they sow and plant? Rashi says, Heim zaru v'katzru samanim litzvo atchiles va'oros ve'elim v'tachnu v'loshu nami samanim litzvo va'ofet. So, I'll say, interestingly enough, over here, these are all things that were done in preparation for the dyes. They were dyes that were needed to go in and dye the curtains of the Mishkan. In order to do that, they had to plant, they had to harvest. Va'atem lo tizru, heim katzru, they harvested. Va'atem lo tiktzru, you shall not harvest. Heim he'elu es akrashim, mekarka la'agala. They moved the boards. They moved the boards from the wagon to the ground. Va'atem lo tachnisu mirushus harabim lirushus hayachid. And you may not move something from rushus haram to rushus hayachid. Heim horidu. I'm sorry, I read that wrong. Excuse me. They moved the boards from the ground to the agala. They removed the boards from the agala, from the wagon, to the ground. And you may not go ahead and move from Rishus Yochid to Rishus Arabim. They often transported beams from one wagon to another wagon. And you should not move an object from one private domain to another private domain. What's wrong with moving an item from one Rishus Yochid to another Rishus Yochid? That's not called Lotza. No. It doesn't mean Rosh Hashayachid to Rosh Hashayachid. Rather, what does it mean? From one Rosh Hashayachid to another Rosh Hashayachid with what? With the Rosh Hashanah in the middle. With the Rosh Hashanah in the middle. Rabbi, if you remember, again, we saw this in the case of the Agala, that often they would hand the boards from one wagon to the next, but the wagons weren't flush against each other. There was a space. So they'd be handing it from Rosh Hashayachid to Rosh Hashayachid with Rosh Hashanah in the middle. So the point the Gemara is making over here is, and I will say again, all of the activities mentioned, beside the board activities, are all talking about activities that were done in the preparation of the herbs to make the spices. The sowing and the planting and the reaping, all of this is done. And even the cooking, the bishul, ofa, all of this is done for the production of the dyes. So the Gemara suggests over here that this price seems to support the opinion that says that no, the 39 malachos doesn't really have anything to do with the 39 times that the word malacha may appear in the Torah, but rather it has to do with the juxtaposition. Since the parasha of Shabbos is right next to the parasha of the Mishkan, we learn from there that whatever was done in the creation, in the fabrication, and the preparation of the Mishkan becomes a prohibited malacha on Shabbos. We'll stop over here. But say just a reminder: tomorrow morning. Different schedule, even different than a Sunday schedule, is we're learning. Daf will be at 7:15. Minyan will be, and we'll daven at 8:00. 8:00 in here at Sasha. So 7:15. Daf Yom Yishir.
You want to ask about Friday?
Yeah.